reinforcing all of the positive things and paying no attention to any of the negative things. And so therefore there's going to be more of the positive and less space for the negative. Like if you're training a dog, you use positive reinforcement and you never punish, you're never showing disappointment in their negative behaviors, but you're just lavishing praise over everything good that they do, then
the carrot and stick.
You know, that's a way.
So you're only using carrots, you never use a stick.
Yeah.
You are listening to our podcast, Do You Have a Minute?, in which a guy and his daughter dive into deep discussions about life's most profound and mundane questions. While we know we don't have all the answers, and possibly none of them, we open our minds to new perspectives, and most importantly, we have a good time in conversation. Join us as we explore the unknown together.
Hey, what are we talking about today?
All your stuff. We're talking about disappointment. And I had another word we need to talk about along with that. It's the dis words. So let's start with dis.
Okay. Discover.
Yeah, discover, disappointment. Just, we have to start with dis, because if you dis somebody, what does that mean you did to them?
So dis has two S's in it.
Does it? I think it only has one. If you dis somebody, disrespect, is that what that means generally?
Yeah. I'm just looking it up. So if you're using it just by itself, you've got to put two S's in it, and then it's to treat with disrespect or to find fault with.
Okay. Disrespectful. So dis with two S's. Okay. So just never dis anybody, or you have to add another S, and that's just too much effort. You don't want to do that.
Too much. So you may as well never
gonna do it. So is it better off just to never do it than to have to worry about adding an S?
Yeah.
Better right. Never to do it.
So, other dis words, what were you thinking?
Well, just
that way.
Disappoint. You got the disrespect for dis, and disillusion. Yeah. Disillusioned is so. Let's call it those.
Okay.
The first, well, the one we're talking about is dis. Disappoint. To disappoint. What literally does that mean?
Are we gonna get into the etymology of the word
first?
Dis. So appointing. If you're appointing someone, that means you're choosing them
for a task or a position or a location in your, even in your, it says expectation, to fail in the hopes or expectations of another. So that's what disappointment means. Their hopes or expectations. Someone is hoping that you're going to fulfill a certain thing or have an expectation of you, or some hope is on your side that you're, and it's an actual task. You're actually there. It's a position. That's what I'm thinking of, appointment. You're not doing something that you could actually physically do. You're physically expected to do something. You can disappoint in other than physical. I don't know. You can appoint someone in other than physical.
I don't know. Let's see. Okay. Appoint. this is getting confusing already. Appoint versus disappoint. Dis doesn't mean on, does it? It's not the same as on point.
Well, it means a failure to the opposite of appointed. You either appoint something or
appointed.
You're disappointed. The person that...
You don't say, I'm very appointed in you.
What do you say instead of that? If you're not disappointed, how do you, I'm happy? What?
You met my expectations. I'm
very pleased.
With your performance.
I'm pleased with that. I'm disappointed or pleased. Pleased is the other side. The synonym is let down or sad.
Yeah, it doesn't translate exactly appointed.
Must be
disappointed.
Pleased.
Gotta be pleased. That makes sense. I mean, that feels like it makes sense.
Disappoint,
that way.
Antonym is opposite. I don't know what that... Satisfy or gratify. That's what it's got. But pleased would work.
I'm satisfied. You didn't disappoint me. You satisfied me.
Gratified my expectations.
That seems a little weird.
Well, I don't know. It seems weird. It's direct, though. Antonyms, satisfy. They don't have fulfilled, gladden, gratify. They didn't have pleased.
No pleased, huh? Interesting.
Because it's an appointment. It's not something necessarily that's... And that that more lends to the fact it's something you can do. You're disappointed in your activities and the physical things. Gladden is pleased. They use the word gladden. They just didn't put pleased on here, but gladden and pleased are about the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. So what would it take for you to be disappointed in something?
So the two parts of disappointment, you have the person who is disappointing another and the person that is disappointed by another. So those two sides, you thought about that. So we talked about that first.
Right. I think since everything is in the eye of the beholder, one person can't be disappointing. I think maybe someone can't be disappointing, like in their own nature, in their own right. Like today I'm going to be a disappointing person. I don't think that
you
they can do that.
You can't choose to be disappointing.
Yeah.
You can disappoint yourself, but you can't say everything I do today is going to disappoint. I'm going to disappoint today. I'm going to...
Right.
You shouldn't. Can you, though? Can you? Can you say, I'm going to do everything I can to disappoint my spouse today or disappoint my boss? It means...
But what if they choose not to be disappointed?
That's what makes this a corollary of love, then, right? You can love someone, but they don't have to accept it.
Yeah, I guess so.
So...
Yeah.
Maybe love is the opposite of disappointment. It could be one of those positive words. They
maybe
say you can give love, but you can't make someone receive it. You can't make someone receive your disappointing attitude, disappointing action. You're trying to disappoint them, and they still like you. That's a problem.
And they still, they still choose. They choose that. So you can try all that you can to not disappoint someone, and they can still choose to be disappointed in you. So
subjective. So it's subjective. You can't objectively disappoint. Can you objectively disappoint something? Can you disappoint so it's a disappointment continuous no matter what position you're looking at it from? Is there an objective disappoint? A flat tire.
Flat tire is not always disappointing because guess what? Maybe I didn't
want
to
go anymore.
Where I was going.
I was
going
to go and now I don't have to. I don't have to do
now
it.
Now I don't have to go.
And I have a good reason. So it's a disappointment. I can say, oh, I'm so disappointed my tire's not working, but actually I'm gladdened, so pleased.
Yeah.
But I can't get where I was going.
Right. So that comes back to my question for you is, for you specifically, what does it take to disappoint you?
Could anyone disappoint me? Could I be disappointed? Have I ever been disappointed? That's the way to look at it. Can I find a time in my life? And you should try this too. See if you can find a time in your life that you've ever been disappointed. Have I been disappointed? I'm trying to think that through. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have I ever been disappointed? Disappointed. That I expected something to happen and didn't happen.
Were you trying to get, you were used to be in running, right? And did you expect that you were going to win a race and
then
didn't? And you were disappointed in yourself?
Was I ever disappointed in my own production?
Yeah. Like or maybe you determined that you were never going to do something, but then one day you did it. And you're like, oh man, I can't believe I did that. Like, I'm so disappointed in myself.
No. I don't think you have to be disappointed, even though you do things that you didn't want to do all the time. That's standard. Depression.
Well, you don't have to feel disappointed. Okay.
Disappointment. If you get disappointment, that's the precursor to depression, to being, and what's the other words that lead to that? It's the first step. Disappointment is the first step on the road to depression.
Okay. Disappointment. And is this from something you've read? Or
I'm just trying to figure it out.
Of everything
it leads you down a road. If you're going
to
be disappointed, let's say you live in disappointment because other people just... They're hideous. They don't live up to my expectations. There's no way they can ever do that. So if they can never do that, and I'm always going to be disappointed, I'm always going to be depressed. That's...
Yeah, and discouragement.
Discouraged. I don't want to do anything because I'm disappointing myself. I can't do it. I don't have any confidence.
Yeah.
So maybe the opposite of that is confidence. I don't have any confidence in what I can do, so I know I'm going to disappoint. My performance isn't going to work. And so... I have no courage to do it. I'm just not going to do anything. I'm going to turn into myself. And that leads you to misery. you know, that same concept.
Misery.
The self-consciousness is miserable. So
okay, so self-consciousness is from, what, does self-consciousness start and beget disappointment, are you disappointed and then you become self-conscious?
Which came first? What is causal? Which one is causal and the other one that's the byproduct?
Right.
Disappointment has to be the byproduct. The cause has to be self-consciousness. So if you're self-conscious, you have the opportunity to be disappointed. If you're not self-conscious, if you're others conscious, if you're all continually thinking out there, and I'm going to fail, but it doesn't matter. It's not going to disappoint me that I fail. My failure is just another step forward, just another opportunity to learn, to grow, to learn, do something next. So if you view it that way, not self-conscious, but interested in learning, then you can be better. There's a phrase here. Dealing with people that want to learn all the time.
What are you reading out of?
I don't. It's about building teams, teamwork, network marketing specifically. This is Robert Kiyosaki. This is the 21st century. And he says building teams is what you need to do a business. And so he says network marketing is the best way to learn. It says, besides, he added, I really love working with people who are hungry to learn and grow. If you're hungry to learn and grow, can you be disappointed? I think that's what I'm trying to point to.
Yeah, I think maybe not. Maybe you don't have a tendency to be disappointed if you're hungry to learn and grow, because everything that might cause someone disappointment would be an opportunity instead.
Right. It's an opportunity.
To learn
and
grow.
It's a... People here are genuinely excited about new ideas. If you could be genuinely excited about new ideas instead of saying, well, that's different than my idea is right. The person who's self-conscious,
right,
saying, I'm black and white and I'm the white and everything I do is right. So since that's the case, anything else is going to disappoint me. But if you're
right,
learning and growing, you want to have yourself open to being others conscious of the world around you, of wanting to learn and grow, then you're not disappointed with whatever comes, whatever situation you find yourself, you're content and you're growing through it with it.
Yeah.
So altruistically, my perfect self, and I don't know, I've been trying to think of something. Let me think some more. You tell me about a time you've been disappointed.
I was trying to come up with something. I feel like I have to go kind of far back for it though.
When you were a naive
because
child?
I can't think of anything recently. When I was a naive child,
yeah,
you said.
Is that how far you have to go back?
Before I became hungry to learn and grow.
Right.
Yes. I was disappointed. I'm feeling like there's something around cancer. There's got to be some disappointment in there somewhere.
Were you disappointed?
I wasn't disappointed when she was diagnosed. I was very sad, but there wasn't any, it feels like I had to be disappointed in something, you have to have someone to blame for not following through with what you expected.
Yeah, because there's two parties, right? It's two parties involved. You have to be disappointed,
yeah,
in someone or something.
Yeah, and even if that other party is self,
if
like
it's
me, myself,
disappointed
and I,
in yourself.
I'm disappointed in myself, but there was nothing to be disappointed in there.
So let me speak scripturally for a minute.
What?
Timothy, where it talks about if you aspire to be a bishop, you aspire a good thing, but no one can be a bishop or be a leader in a church if he doesn't have the correct rule over his own house. So you've got to work if your family life isn't appropriate. And that's why we started with the community discussions. So if I use that as disappointment, that's probably where I could come the closest. I'm disappointed that my family life isn't strong the way I would envision it to be, what I expect.
What you expect now or what past you expected?
What I expect the life is supposed to be. And if I use that scripture as a base, you expect that if you do enough work, if you do good enough work, that your family can be helpful with you. Your tier one can support your efforts into tier two. And that's an expectation.
Yeah.
I can be disappointed, not necessarily in them for not supporting me, but disappointed in myself for not being the right person that can be supported by going to tier two, because tier one is still in a dangerous Well, we've had a couple of
hurricanes
that happened in hurricane mode. It's in chaos.
Yeah.
If tier one's still in chaos, you can't step out and do tier two stuff. So that's right. There's a disappointment in that. And I am generally disappointed in that. And you get disappointed. I mean, I've had goals. I've had expectations or, you know, you that your business is going to be to a certain level or that you're going to, you know, rich and famous.
Yeah.
You have expectation to be rich and famous. And you're disappointed in that. You're not. But I'm not done. I guess there's got to be levels of disappointment. So I could say I am disappointed that my position in life at this age isn't stronger. And others are disappointed in me that it's not stronger at this point. You would expect that someone who's an empty nester has things figured out.
Yeah.
But I'm still working on it with you. You're much further ahead because you're right in the middle of teenagerhood in your house. And and you're figuring it out. So you'll have it figured out by the time that you're an empty nester, right?
Yeah. Are we speaking specifically about finances? Is that what we're...
Finances and living and...
Is that what needs to be figured out? And operating
in the world, being of service, serving communities like we were talking about. Second tier work.
Yeah.
And possibly being invited to the third tier that we talked about. So being of value, changing the world. The change of the world, you have a better chance of it than me because I'm already... Though that's not necessarily true.
You're already in your 60s, and what do you do now?
Yeah, we could call it a disappointment, but it's not even close to being a disappointment for me. So you have to try to figure that out. I could say, yeah, that's a disappointment, and I could try to be disappointed in it, but I'm not at all disappointed in that. And why? Why am I not?
Because you don't want to be.
Because of faith?
Are you? Because you're hungry for learning and growth.
Yeah, what that said, hungry to learn and grow and genuinely excited about new ideas. There's new ideas everywhere. And I continue to discuss them and write them down. And I've got my little book. Yeah, I don't have the commonplace book, but I should.
You sure do have a folder of papers.
Every page. I mean, there's four of them right here. Here's one. It's a commonplace book. It's just on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And that's what's jumbling my office. That's why I'm so filled with all these stacks of papers. There's important stuff on them. And if they were in a commonplace book, if they were in a book, it would be just as hidden as it is in these files. I would never look.
Right.
So that's why I'm not. Because Harlan Sanders didn't start his first restaurant until he was 65.
Yeah, you've still got time.
So that's why there's plenty of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Russell M. Nelson was not given the prophetic mantle until he was 92. And now he's 100. He's had 8 years. No one expected him to have 8 years in his position, leading the church as leading. So, you know, 92 isn't too old. And 65 certainly isn't too old. And I'm not even close to 65.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think that there is a too old to be the president.
There's been that thought, right? I loved Ronald Reagan's statement about that, though.
He
and Mondale. It's an interesting thing. We should link it, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Where
we'll put it
where
in the show
says,
notes.
If we can link that video. They asked him, well, President Reagan, there's discussion about age and whether you know, they gave an example of someone that was too old before. What do you think about age? And Ronald Reagan says, you know, I'm not going to make age a part of this campaign in identifying that my opponent is too young or naive to accomplish the task at hand, or something like that. Because Mondale was in his 40s, and Mondale laughed. I mean, it's in the clip. He laughed at it. It was funny. It was a really funny quip. I'm not going to make age an issue. They were saying, you're too old, Ronald Reagan, you're too old to be president. And they're saying, you're too old to be president. He says, I'm not going to make age a factor in that my opponent's too young and doesn't have enough world experience to operate as president.
Right. Okay.
So he turned it around the other way and made it. He did an excellent job with that answer. Everyone laughed. He's always used humor. And humor hasn't been part of the current debate in regard to 80s, 82 and whatever, 78, 84. 80s isn't too old, though.
Yeah. Assuming you're in good mental help.
Unless you start declining and you can't operate.
Yeah. But nobody would tell anyone if that's what was happening, right? They wouldn't come right out and say it because you can't lose confidence. Hello.
Hello. So we took a little break there by way of disappointment because it's our role. It's our role not to disappoint others. So that happened to be someone very close to me who I care about a lot, and I need to let her know that. And if she thought that I didn't care and I didn't call her back or I didn't try to talk to her right now, she might be disappointed, and she would most likely be disappointed.
Yeah, and you were concerned about that.
Yes.
You would be disappointed in yourself if you didn't do it.
Well, I don't know, because I've lived my whole life not doing it so far, and I'm not disappointed in it. But I have
You're
determined.
You're trying to build a habit?
I have determined that it's useful. Maybe I can do something to help the disappointment in others not be so rampant. So I'm saying,
okay,
in order to dissuade that disappointment, possible disappointment there. Now, there are still things disappointing in that. I've been on the phone all morning still. I had a client call. It lasted a long time. And then I talked to another daughter of mine for a bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that took some time. See, and now on my phone, there's someone else that's ringing in, which I'm okay
just
disappointing
now?
Him. It's not going to be a disappointment so much on his side that I call him back in an hour. Or
because he's expecting that maybe you might be busy.
Right, correct.
And
he's not going to be disappointed in
like,
that. He can leave a message and he won't be disappointed.
Yeah.
If you choose, so...
Well, if you...
Expectation. If I choose to
yes.
allow a greater expectation than someone else.
Uh-huh. Can you choose to allow... Say that in different words.
If I choose to promote that I have more care for a certain area, then I'd better be able to break away from other things I'm working on to put that care towards that area, right? We're talking about tier one and tier two stuff. If I'm operating in tier two and tier one calls me and I say I care about tier one this much that whatever I'm doing in tier two doesn't matter as much, so I'm going to break tier two and jump into tier one for a minute. And so I did that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that description was. So as not to disappoint tier one.
Yeah. If you understand what the expectations are, then you're able to avoid disappointment. So if I had a tier two event going on and tier one tried to contact me, but I know that they're not expecting that I'm going to answer right away or even call back in the next 2 hours, like... I know that expectation, so I know that even a phone call back in a couple of hours will still not disappoint.
Right.
Yeah, so knowing what the expectations are, that requires communication and definitely a lot of mind reading, but you get it wrong a lot of times.
Well, and if it's wrong, you know that you're disappointed. If you have disappointed, then you can make an adjustment. So that's that growth and learning. You're interested in growing learning. That's why I'm not necessarily disappointed with it. All of the disappointment that I've caused someone else.
Right.
But I can stop causing that disappointment by learning and growing and advancing. Becoming something different.
Yeah.
So that's useful. And maybe I had...
Yeah.
I had another thought from another book that may work out coming in here. Because we're talking about disappointing other people and changing that disappointment. Being able to appoint... that other person. Please gratify, satisfy whatever their expectations are.
Right.
And that's got to be our role in regard to disappointment. So we're talking about disappointment. The only reason we'd even care about that word is in order to eradicate it from our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And you eradicate it by first growing yourself and by second becoming who you need to become with the expectations of your relationships.
Becoming well-rounded in your relationship.
Well-rounded. Touching them, you know, and what they need. That's right. That's what well-rounded means. That's good. We had that discussion. Because it has to pay attention to what their expectations are. That group that you're trying to be a part of, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that group.
So if you're well-rounded in your relationship with your spouse, then you're meeting their expectations. You're not disappointing them. They're not going to want to kick you out.
Yeah.
You're not too much of one thing or too little of one thing. You're exactly, you fit.
You fit in.
You're the baby's porridge in the Three Bears. You know?
Not too hot or too cold.
You're just right.
So the other idea, well, what we could do that. I did get another quote, another book. I'm reading Will Smith, his book.
Oh, yeah.
Will.
Okay.
I knew he had talked about something about this in his chapter, Destruction, chapter 9. He talks about this disappointment, kind of that way. One quote here, Daddy-O used to say, you can stop a homicide, but you can't stop no suicide. So, meaning if you're of the mode to be disappointed, mm-hmm. you can't be stopped. You can't train someone away from disappointment or feeling that.
Okay.
They kind of the same status. You have to internally feel that need to want to grow and learn and grow, be hungry and excited for new ideas.
Yeah, you have to change your philosophy on life.
Which is cool.
Because you're not gonna change, which is cool, because we just talked about that last week.
Right. And that's why the conversation continues. What about last week? Tell me how that matched.
What we were talking, huh?
What do you mean?
Was it last week or was it a couple of weeks before that when we were talking about mooching? Yeah, we were, talking about how do you train someone out of being a moocher? You've got to change their whole perspective.
Right.
They need to have a different philosophy of finances and responsibility and living, you know?
It's a psychological thing.
That's how you train someone out of suicide. Maybe you have to change their outlook on life from the seed within them instead of being like, slap, you're not suicidal.
Yeah, you can't tell them what to do. You can't change them. You have to encourage them and persuade them and open them up to the possibility of changing their own psyche. They have to change their own psyche. And it's what Dave Ramsey says. I love his quote. He says, this is not a money thing. Budgeting and becoming wealthy is not a money thing. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with psychology and how you think about it. And that's Robert Kiyosaki's statement, too. He says, it's not about how hard you work and how hard you work for the money. It's what you do. It's how you think about it. It's who you want to be.
Yeah.
You become who you want to be.
Think and Grow Rich. Is that Kiyosaki's book? Yeah.
Napoleon Hill. It's kind of the same. Well, it's all the same thing. Of course, everything is connected. Think and Grow Rich just talks about, you set your mind on something. What's your definite purpose? Develop a definite purpose in life. That's Think and Grow Rich. And then work towards it continuously.
Yeah.
That's the mindset. If you're just trying to make money, it's never going to work. That's not a definite purpose. Making money, and that's what Kiyosaki pointed out, making money is not a definite purpose, and working hard is not a definite purpose. Neither of those make any difference. You'll still be poor.
Right.
Will Smith talks about another example here that ties in to the fact that you can't stop a suicide. If you're determined to beat yourself down, there's nothing that anyone else can do to get you out of that depressive mode or that disappointing mode. I said, if you're going to fight Mike Tyson, and you have two ways to do that. You can go and get the best trainer, and you can do the best work, and you can work the best way you can and do everything. But if you go into the fight and kind of halfway did it, Mike knocks you out in 15 seconds. Okay, but if you lollygag during the training, didn't really eat right, and let your boy Pookie train you, and then Mike knocks you out in 15 seconds, now you have to face an unbearable loss. And the loss isn't that you got beat by Mike Tyson. It said you will know that you didn't only lose to Mike Tyson. You lost to yourself. The fight wasn't you versus Mike. It was you and Mike versus you.
So if
you don't prepare the right way, if you don't have the definite purpose in mind and you're working towards it and you're building yourself to the challenge that you're going to take on, he says it isn't two against one. It's you and the universe versus you. It's respectable to lose to the universe. It's a tragedy to lose to yourself.
And that would be a great disappointment.
Yeah. And in order to lose to yourself, you have to be of that mentality that you're going to disappoint. a tragedy. Is a tragedy a disappointment then? He used that word. It's a tragedy.
Maybe not necessarily. Because does tragedy imply that it was caused by someone that you can blame? I mean, maybe sometimes it can. But unexplainable acts of God can be tragedies too.
Is there another word for that? Natural disaster? A disaster is something you don't have any connection to. A tragedy is something you can probably blame someone for.
Okay. Yeah.
Isn't that a literary thing? A tragedy? A comedy? A tragedy? A drama? I think tragedy is a literary storyline.
Yeah.
So it's something that you can blame on someone. Yeah, you can blame a tragedy on someone. And you blame it, in this case, on yourself for lack of preparation.
Yeah. I wonder if I read something or heard someone talk about tragedy when I was younger that made me think that a tragedy was unavoidable. It's something that was going to happen no matter what. Maybe middle schoolers and the way they talk about everything being a tragedy.
Okay.
Like they speak in absolutes.
So let's relate those both together.
I'm literally dying right now, you know?
I'm literally dying. I'm literally in love.
Oh, it was just a tragedy.
Tragedy and disappointment, are they equivalent? Or do they even match? Assuming tragedies are going to occur, and I believe that's probably true. They'll happen all the time.
Yeah, tragedy is the event, and disappointment is the feeling that you feel about
it. It's how you feel about it. How you either want to learn and grow through it, or you want to blame in it.
Yeah.
So to be disappointed...
Tragedy doesn't always have to be a disappointment.
Right. You have to blame someone for disappointment to even exist. Does disappointment require blame?
Yeah.
Is that causal?
Yeah, I think so.
If you can't blame anyone, then you can't be disappointed. That's what we started with. It's disappointed in some other, or some other is disappointed in you. If you don't blame that other, there's no disappointment.
Right.
It's just a tragedy. It's a tragedy that this occurred. Now let's learn from it. Let's move on. So disappointment's a choice.
Yeah. Is it useful? Do you think being disappointed or receiving disappointment can be useful?
You know my answer to that. Go ahead.
Your answer is 7.
7 meaning perfection.
Good, get away.
Good, get out of here.
Yeah.
You heard that way too often in your childhood. So now make some
what
meaning.
Is your answer?
Make some meaning out of that. Those two are probably very accurate. So what was the question in the first place? Now that you brought in those flippant answers.
Is disappointment useful?
Is it useful? Is it useful? Good, get out of here. 7. Is it useful? And how do you make those? I'm good at twisting things. I can twist those answers into the right answer for what you're asking.
I know you are so good at twisting things.
My answer is emphatically no. It has no value. It should never be used.
Okay.
So why is that?
Okay.
Even in a conversation I had this morning with my most significant other, she said, you don't know everything. Don't even act like it. What are you acting like you know everything? This conversation, and I want to point that out. Even though I say emphatically, it should never be used, I have no idea. It's only just what I'm saying to say something. I'm just filling space.
Okay.
And I do want to say, if I find out some other reason, that's why we have show notes. Look in the show notes and see the refutation of what I said that I thought was true. I'm searching that out as we're putting it in show notes. And if you identify something that's not true, add it to the show notes and say, we're idiots. And I am. So even though I think emphatically it has no value, do you feel it has any value?
Yeah, a little bit, I think.
Okay.
Because if someone expresses to you that they're disappointed, then that's an illumination of something that you could improve on. You don't have to be disappointed in yourself, but like if no one else is disappointed in you for any other reason, then there's no spaces to grow. You're perfect. Ta-da!
Yeah.
Nobody is disappointed in me, so I don't have to work hard on anything else. You know?
So if you are in a black and white world, everyone's white and there is no black, everyone's perfect, there is no disappointment.
Uh-huh.
In a world that in a world that isn't black and white, that has gray areas, that has faith that we live by, there is always disappointment. You're never meeting the full objective of what even you decided to do. You can't meet the full objective because you don't really understand what the objective is. I mean, in a world of faith and not absolutes, in a world, well, what is that? It's a world of faith. If it's just not absolutes, how does the world talk about it? Gray areas.
Yeah, that's how they talk about it.
Yeah, psychologically, it? It's a gray area. There's a whole gamut of gray areas. It's not just black and white. There's not just true and false. That's the scientific method. All we're doing is trying a hypothesis and then seeing what the examples come out of that, trying to make sense of what we see.
Right.
So in a world that way, there's always a disappointment. Even if you think you have a good hypothesis, you might be disappointed that the hypothesis in your scientific exploration was the wrong direction, and the results showed something else affected this that wasn't what I thought was going to affect it. So let's adjust our hypothesis. And you can't be...
Yes.
Yeah, so disappointment.
Well, disappointment is present, but is it useful? And now I'm wondering something else. Let me think. Hold on. Positive reinforcement.
Is it the opposite of positive reinforcement?
And where... Yeah, where you're reinforcing all of the positive things and paying no attention to any of the negative things. And so therefore, there's going to be more of the positive and less space for the negative. Like if you're training a dog, you use positive reinforcement and you never punish, you're never showing disappointment in their negative behaviors, but you're just lavishing praise over everything good that they do, then
the carrot and stick.
You know, that's a way.
So you're only using carrots. You never use a stick.
Yeah. And so maybe I'm wrong.
Do you think that works with dogs?
Disappointment. Well, I think people get really mad when they find out that you hit your dog with a stick because they did something bad, you know, because your dog isn't, they don't know better.
That's the argument.
They're trained.
That's the argument of capital punishment. Should you swat your children?
Uh-huh.
You know, and does it work if you don't swat your children? Does the carrot work by itself? It's saying positive reinforcement. I'm just gonna train with carrots my whole life. I'm never gonna use a stick. If you never use a stick, you never use fear. I'm only gonna use love. I'm never gonna use fear. Fear is not part of my life. So that's saying like disappointment. I'm never gonna use disappointment. I'm only gonna use encouragement. Never going to tell them I'm disappointed in you because you didn't accomplish this the way I wanted. I encourage you because you accomplished 20% of what I wanted you to do. Boy, I'm happy about that. 20%. But I'm not disappointed at all in the 80% you didn't get done.
Yeah.
But I think that what you said, disappointment has to be a fleeting thing. It's something that you watch floating down the river, like a leaf on the river. It floats away. You identify it, it's there, but the river's moving it away. As quick as you're growing and learning, that disappointment is past you. It is a tragedy. A tragedy is a tragedy. It actually affects you, but it doesn't have to ruin the rest of your day or minute or life just because it was a tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's still learning and growth based on that tragedy that occurred.
Okay. So maybe the feeling that the tragedy is important. The tragedy is useful. But the feeling of disappointment after the tragedy, because of the tragedy, is not useful. Even though, or if, or whatever, you're doing something that would merit disappointment in someone else, that you can still learn and grow from your actions without their disappointment. Right?
Would you want to change?
If there was an absence
of disappointment. If you didn't know it disappointed them, and that's what you first brought out, is it's an indication that you have some growth to do.
It's a signal.
It's a signal. If you don't use that, if they don't display disappointment, then I'll say, well, yeah, I'm disappointed that you were 20% off on that. You got 80% right, and that's great. You know, I like you being 80% good, but I'd like you to be perfect, and I'm disappointed in the 20%. That's enough of a signal that the person can work towards that next 20%. I don't have to make the two mistakes I made in that piece I just played. I can get it 100% right. and so I can work towards it and keep working and keep growing and keep living. And so that's a stick. You just beat them on the head with a disappointment, but it's a fleeting disappointment. You talked about a tragedy as though a tragedy is always going to be part of your life, part of your story. And it is. I guess There are big tragedies that are always part of your story. They'll always be there. But they're not disappointing. The disappointment of it is that it only lasts.
Is what you think of it.
Whatever you're missing because of it. Did disappointment still there? I mean, do you remember the 20% that they didn't play that right? I'm disappointed in 20%. As soon as they play it perfect, as soon as they perfect it, say it's just a piano piece or a musical piece they're doing, and well, that was perfect. I think I'm going to give you 100% on that, even 100% plus, because you put feeling in it that wasn't written in the score. But I'm disappointed because you didn't play it exactly as the author, the composer put it on the score. You did that extra to it, and that's not right. Mozart would hate you for that. So you can still be disappointed. You find things to be disappointed in. Your fingers weren't curled
even
enough.
In a perfect performance. Yeah.
You know, you didn't smile. If you would just smile, it would be much better.
Right.
So
I'm thinking about my challenges in leadership, my struggles to be a leader, and how I didn't use enough positive reinforcement. I didn't use as much as someone else wanted me to use, and I used too much expressions of disappointment, and that disappointed them. They were disappointed in me. I was disappointed in them for their performance. And
yeah, in your strategy.
And it didn't fix anything. My expressing my disappointment did not fix it. It just caused other problems.
More discipline. So whose problem is that? They talk about these methods, the sandwich method. Say something good, then give them the disappointment, and then give them some encouragement at the end again. I think those are just placating. They're trying to play with the system.
That's what it feels like to me, too. Yeah. Maybe you and I are psychopaths for thinking that, but because it works for everyone else, right?
And that discussion,
you and me can spot it, and we don't want to use it.
We are going to have that discussion at some point on how to be a psychopath. And why we are all psychopaths, and whether it's good or bad, whether that's good or bad. But these methods, placating, if you're just trying to, it has to be genuine. If you're going to use a sandwich method and it's genuine, it's different. You know, if you really did love the fact that they got 100% perfect on the piece, I'm just going to use the example I just used. 100% perfect. You technically, your fingers move the right way, a piano piece that Mozart wrote.
Yeah.
I'm 100% disappointed that you put your own expression in that. He wrote this forte and that piano, and you did it backwards, and it sounded didn't sound the way he wrote it, and I'm upset by that. But it's nice that you smiled. I love that you smiled when you were doing it, because you thought you were pulling one over on me. And I know that you know that I'm a purist, and I want it to play exactly the way Mozart wrote it. The composer's rule is the rule, and you pulled one over on me, so you're smiling. So I love that you smiled. So there's two positive things on the end. But the middle thing, you completely disappointed me in my expectation that the composer is the composer. You can't enhance the composer.
Yeah.
So if that's genuine and you're actually, I guess you can do that. But if you're trying to manipulate someone, it's manipulation.
Yeah.
The guy's not really manipulating his students, you know. But if you're trying to manipulate by saying, did I say enough positive things now? Now can I tell you what you need to help here to fix? And will you receive it as a constructive criticism instead of a slap in the face?
Right.
But if you say all those words, then they take it as a slap in the face anyway.
Yeah, manipulation. And that's what it feels like.
I think that's part of what you said with your community. You've got to identify your community as what their expectations are. Yeah, fitting in, being well-rounded in a community. You have to fit in. You have to understand what their expectations are, what your expectations are. Make sure they understand what yours are so that you can make corrections and indicate disappointments. And disappointments that are like a leaf floating on a river that are just floating by. Say, you know, this doesn't mean a whole lot, but I do want to point it out. It's a leaf I've seen floating by. And if you can make sure that leaf doesn't fall again, it would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's now I'm remembering that's something else that I had realized was that I expressed my disappointment and unmet expectations, but I forgot that I had to lay out those expectations in the first place.
Yeah, they were they were silent. They were your expectations, but not necessarily voiced to the group beforehand.
Right, right. So they were things that I thought were like common knowledge, but they weren't.
So
they
leadership-wise, maybe instead of trying to correct that thing, you say, well, what, did I clearly identify it? And so then that's when you come to the group, in front of the group, and say, maybe I didn't make this clear before. We don't want to play wrong notes. If you play wrong notes,
let me lay that
I'm
going to
probably mention it, if that's okay with you guys. Is it all right? Do you guys all agree? Wrong notes aren't going to be allowed. And then they'll say, did anyone play wrong notes? I don't think we... Well, yeah. If I notice them, I'm not saying I notice them right now, but if I notice them, I may mention them. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Just make
so then
clear.
You go back to the
now
general.
Now you know what to expect.
Yeah, just in general expectation as a leader in a group, maybe you do voice the general expectation first and then specifically go to the person and say, you know, I've tried to make it general and you're still not hearing it. Can you play that for me privately for a minute? Let me show you what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And yet, is disappointment useful?
It's useful in a fleeting, in as identifying issues, identifying growth possibilities.
Yes. It's not useful to dwell on it, to highlight the disappointment. It's the disappointment is meant to highlight the event, but that's
all. It highlights your change. It highlights your next work project, the next thing you have to grow and advance and learn about. It's like an acute pain. If it's an acute pain all the time, it's not good if you chronically disappoint or if you're chronically disappointed.
Right.
Like from the leadership standpoint, if you're chronically disappointed, you're always disappointed in this group, it means you didn't lead them the right direction. You've got to change the leadership. You've got to change how you talk about it and how they fully understand the group and what we're supposed to be accomplishing so that you can eliminate your disappointment. If you live in continual disappointment, it means you're not extending enough effort towards training or leading or helping them grow.
Okay.
What's the other? There's another statement here that I marked. Generally excited about new ideas. When you can help as many others, this is what how he described network marketing. Back to Robert Kiyosaki. He says, I came to realize that while personal success is fulfilling, so your own self is fulfilling, it's much more fulfilling when you can help many others create their own success as well. So when you're leading in a group or whatever you're trying to lead and setting up a team that you want success, it's more gratifying, less disappointing if you help everyone grow as well.
Okay. So receiving disappointment is useful in that way that we had just laid out. Is it useful to dole out disappointment, to express it?
To express disappointment.
What my real question is did this change your mind in whether you're going to let yourself feel disappointment over anything or not?
Yes.
Do you think that you are going to, from now on,
view disappointment in a different light?
Be disappointed about something.
I'm going to view disappointment in a different light.
Yeah.
If you think, well, my emphatic statement earlier that disappointment is never valuable.
Yeah.
Satan is never valuable. So if disappointment is black and you're white, you're trying to be white and it's black, it's never valuable. But we live in gray. We don't live in black and white. Even if it's black, even if it is definitely black and you're definitely white, disappointment still has to be identified. And so as long as it's fleeting, as long as you don't live in it. Yeah, my view of disappointment isn't that you need to eradicate it, but you need to treat it as acute. Treat it immediately.
You need to use it as a tool instead of a reaction.
Or as a characteristic.
You use it as a response, maybe.
Instead of a reaction?
Yeah.
A knee-jerk reaction of disappointment. If you're disappointed, if that's just your reaction to everything. It's like someone who says no to everything. Sometimes no is a good thing to say. Yes, if you're just always saying yes. If you're always saying disappointed, I'm always pleased with your effort. There's no value in that. You've got to be disappointed at some point, even if disappointment is just for a percentage of what's going on.
Right. Okay.
So you've got to use, and it's an indicator of growth, an indicator toward growth. You're wrong Isn't disappointment a statement that you're wrong? I believe you're
about
wrong.
About something, yeah.
You've disappointed my understanding and truth by saying that, and I believe you're wrong. And here's why.
Yeah.
So you were disappointed in my emphatic statement that disappointment is useless. You got disappointed in that, so we talked about it a little bit, and my idea changed a little bit.
Yeah. You still hold that idea in a black and white world, but, you know, since there's gray.
I can see the gray. Different. I'm not going to participate in it, but I see it.
Yeah. Right.
So what about you and your question on leadership? Did that change?
It reminded me is that I forget. It seems like I forget a lot of the lessons that I learn.
Yeah.
And so it reminded me of what I had learned before. And maybe by remembering it, it will be a stronger part of
by discussing, and that's the whole purpose of conversation too, is if you try to teach something, try to talk about it, you're going to internalize it much more. It'll become part of you. What is it I heard just in general, the statement the other day, any learning we do has to take the place of something else. You have to lose something in order to gain something new.
Okay.
There's only so much conscious space you have. It was Jordan Peterson talking about consciousness. It's only so much conscious space you have. If you decide to bring something to the forefront of your consciousness, something else has to step back. We don't have unlimited conscious activity. You know, what you choose to focus on has to just be limited. So if we're choosing to focus on this idea, disappointment for a while, there's going to be a time disappointment's going to take a back seat and we'll forget that we ever talked about it, which is going to be fine. There'll be other things that you're moving toward, you're moving into. That's the eternal progression, the receding horizon. You're always moving towards it, into something else.
Yeah. Very good.
So.
Well, is there anything else?
I'm not at all disappointed about where we got to here.
Okay, good.
not that it's all encouraging, but I think we're good. Let's end this discussion and know that disappointment is a fleeting thing. You need to identify it, but don't wallow in disappointment.
Very good. Yeah, I like that. Don't wallow in it.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast. We appreciate you taking time to listen. We'd love to hear your feedback and thoughts. Please continue the conversation with us at doyouhaveaminuteconversations@gmail.com. Your participation means the world to us, and we look forward to sharing more exciting conversations with you in the future.